Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this Inner Circle Motherwise Masterclass today. And I welcome you all. I hope you've had a lovely week. And the topic today is going to be about that real beginning part of the third trimester. So when you're kind of heading into that 26 to 28 weeks, well, you know, you often can feel at that point that you're on the home straight. Woohoo! And in reality, I can tell you that it's kind of more like the second half of the journey when you kind of go through the mountains that are going to get climbed over this next 3 month period. And so, yes, gestationally, it's the last third, but emotionally, it can be the second half. Okay, so I've got a list of things that I want to talk to you about today and to put on your to-do list and get more detail on and give you a bit of an overview on. So one of the first things I want to get really clear for you are the signs and symptoms of preeclampsic toxemia. Now, preeclampsia is a pretty major major complication of pregnancy. And women having their first baby are at the highest risk for it. And also women who have not had a long period of time of their body having exposure to the partner's sperm. So that is that if your partner is relatively new or if your partner's been around for a long time, this baby daddy, but you've been using barrier protection for a long time. So if basically the sperm is not being ejaculated into your vagina very much, you've got a higher risk of getting preeclampsia. Now, we don't understand, science doesn't understand why, but we do know there's a correlation. It's all to do with we suspect about your body creating antibody status to, like it's been like the sperm being kind of a foreign body in your body, and that's kind of a hypothesis of what's going on. Okay, but every woman still has the chance of getting preeclampsia. So preeclampsia is gestational or pregnancy induced hypertension or high blood pressure with another complication, typically an organ dysfunction. So that is either you start getting abnormal renal level function levels or abnormal liver function levels. When you have got gestational or pregnancy-induced hypertension, high blood pressure, they will be watching you like a hawk that it doesn't become preeclampsia. But there's some real certain signs and symptoms that you need to watch out for. So I'm going to run through them. And you only need one of them to as a little red flag. So firstly, if you're getting ankle or feet puffy swellingness that is not going down overnight after you've been sleeping. So yes, it's absolutely common to have puffy feet later in pregnancy, but when you lie down horizontally, that blood and all that edematousness, puffiness should reduce so that when you wake up in the morning, your ankles are not looking like cankles, and then they kind of get worse over the day. So if it doesn't self-resolve overnight, that can be a red flag. And or if you start to get a swelling or puffiness above the neck or above the heart, basically, because that becomes illogical based on gravity. So if you get to your hands or your neck or your face, start getting all puffy, you wake up one morning and you look at your face in the mirror and go, oh my goodness, where is my neck gone? You know, then these are red flags. Okay, other things, another symptom can be if you have liver pain. So that's pain that's sort of below those right ribs, you know, maybe at the front, maybe at the back, but on that sort of right side and it's aching a bit and that's not okay. We want to know about that. And also if you start getting headaches, particularly strong frontal headaches. And then the last symptom that you can get is visual disturbances. So that's like seeing spots or blurry vision. So if you get any of those things going on, the first thing you want is a blood pressure reading done on the same day. Yes, on the same day. Blood pressure reading done, and if that blood pressure is looking, is confirmed as being hypertensive, or it's kind of creeping up from what your baseline blood pressure was at the beginning of your pregnancy, it's looking like it might be becoming hypertensive, then either way, you'd want to have a set of bloods done so you can check those organ functions and some other things that are checked to do with preeclampsia. So that's a big, important point to be aware of now that you're into the third trimester. All right, so other things. All right, you want to be starting to get yourself aware of the benefits of complementary therapies during this third trimester particularly. So that's things like seeing your medical herbalist or naturopath and getting some really great therapies to do with getting your womb ready for contracting and your cervix ripened and softening. Those particular ones tend to be used more from 35 weeks onwards. But there's lots of other things, particularly acupuncture, etc., that can be really helpful to be doing and keeping you well. You're investing in your wellness, basically, and your baby's subsequent consequential wellness. So very good things to be doing, and make sure that you're touching base with your naturopath locally and taking advantage of these things and looking after yourself. You want to be starting to feel comfortable with your decisions of your birth plan, your birth location. So if you are choosing not to birth in a high risk secondary hospital, sort of teaching hospital, those types of situations, if you're not going there, in other words, you're home birthing or you are birth center birthing, then just know, so long as you are a healthy, normal woman without medical complications and you're going into spontaneous natural labor, then well done you for choosing that, because actually, statistically, that's the safest place for you to be with the best outcome, which is a whole other little, conversation in itself, or a whole other little webinar to discuss. But the point is, it is. However, if there are any complications within your pregnancy or yourself medically or with your baby, generally speaking, being in a secondary care facility at a hospital, that is deemed as the safest. So, but either way, this is a big, important conversation, but you need to be starting to feel that your decisions are good and sound and based on best practice and working for you and your intuition. And because the woman feeling comfortable in her labor environment is absolutely critical to how long her labor takes. So you want to know that you're feeling good. What else? We have discussed earlier in previous webinars, but in your midwife or obstetrician who's looking after you should be explaining to you that you would be having a set of bloods done around this time. Maybe you've just done it, maybe you're just about to do it, which is a routine set of bloods that check various different levels of various different things, typically including a gestational diabetes screen or diagnostic test. And also please ask to make sure that you have your iron or ferritin level checked. You should be really getting proactive by this stage in your reading on childbirth labors. And I'm not talking about reading books about pregnancy and babies. I'm talking about reading a whole book, or more than one whole book, just on childbirth. My favorites being Ina May Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth and Janet Velasquez's New Active Birth. And also, critically, very biased on this, is you and your birth support person or people all reading the labor and birth chapter of my Oh Baby book. Look, it's the best wisdom I can give you. So go for it. The other thing that can be really good to do at this time, hand in hand, is make sure you've downloaded my free guide to organic birth. And I would recommend that you've also invested in watching my 1.5 hour video called Organic Birth, Understanding the Secrets of Natural Labor and Normal Birth. All right, so make sure you're really starting to get proactive on this stuff, because remember, babies can be born early, 1 in 20 are, and that could be you. Why not? Absolutely could be. So make sure you're ready. Okay, now the other thing that you want to be doing at this stage in your pregnancy is starting to make sure that the informed consent choices of to decline or not certain things to do with labour, birth and the baby, that you are getting this information on board, because particularly if the baby comes early, you're going to have to make these decisions early. So you need to feel like you know what you're talking about and you're feeling comfortable with your decision. So to give you a bit of a list of those things that you need to be knowing that you're feeling confident with, firstly, the third stage of childbirth, which is the placenta, and that there's three versions of how that can arrive. And there is firstly the physiological birthing of a placenta, which is just basically after you've had a natural normal birth. You can have a natural normal birth of a birth of a baby, then you have a birth of a placenta. That's certainly in the country where I was trained in midwifery. That is absolutely the norm. That is the go-to, unless there are risk factors for the woman to hemorrhage. And there's kind of a whole list on those, which is another whole topic. But your midwife or obstetrician should discuss that with you. But if you have any of those risk factors, or you are actually actively hemorrhaging after giving birth, then the common next option is the active or managed delivery of the placenta, and that's when an ecbolic or oxytocin is given, and the midwife or the obstetrician will use controlled cord traction to deliver that placenta. Now, the purpose of delivering that placenta is not to speed up its delivery. The purpose is to reduce preventable hemorrhaging. Okay, so you need to understand all of that and have had a good discussion with your care provider on that. And then the third one, way that placentas will arrive sometimes, is occasionally they get stuck, or part of the placenta gets stuck, sort of embedded too deeply into the uterine wall, and it needs to be manually removed in theatre by an obstetrician. And that's basically just a bit of a bugger, really, that's happened at the end of the birth. But it's also like we have to go, thank goodness we live in a Western world where we can go to theatre and have this delivered manually. And thank goodness we are lucky enough and blessed enough to have that, because if you live in a third world country where you do not have access to hospital facilities and that piece of placenta or entire placenta is not removed, that basically can be a death sentence for the woman, because she will get septicemia and die of blood poisoning. So it's a pretty serious thing when you don't have access to modern obstetrics. So be really, really rapt that you do have access to that. If that happens to you, okay, whatever, no big deal. Just get on with it. Worst things can happen that haven't. So whatever, just put it behind you and don't, you know, rant and whinge to the entire world that, oh dear, you had to go to theatre and have your placenta removed and it ruined your whole birth. Don't even go there. Please. All right. Next, cord cutting. Okay, so there's kind of two things within this that you need to make decisions on. Firstly, who is cutting the cord? And secondly, when the cord is getting cut. Okay, so on quite a few of these topics, by the way, I've got some specific podcasts that you can listen to that are just on these topics that I go into more detail on. But this is really just a reminder that you should be thinking about it, okay, and getting information on it. So the cord cutting, there is something very fashionable these days called delayed cord cutting, but I do find that not a lot of the women themselves always understand what it's about. It is touted as a very useful thing to give the baby, you know, lots more delivery of the blood that's still sitting in that placenta, and also gives them all the iron, lots more delivery of iron. Well, that's because every molecule of blood has four pieces of iron in it. So, that makes sense. But the question has to be, does the baby need all that extra blood? And that is, to be honest, a little bit debated. Babies are born generally with more blood than they need, going from a intrauterine low oxygen environment to the extrauterine higher oxygen environment. So babies that receive big hit of placental blunt can be, they say, it hasn't really been brilliantly studied, and there's conflictions on studies, but certainly logically you'd have to say they may have a higher risk of getting jaundice after they're born. So, but what I would say is that not to stress about it, okay? If you're using the delayed cord traction, physiological, natural birthing of the placenta, well, that automatically means that there is a delay in cutting the cord. If the baby is hemorrhaging, if you are hemorrhaging or the baby is needing some resus, then depending on where the resuscitator is located, that may not be done right at the perineum with the baby close, and the cord may need to be cut and the baby taken to a resuscitator. So what I would say is don't get all stressed about whether it occurs or it doesn't occur. And I think it's really great in these circumstances to have a plan A, which is sort of your first preferred plan, which is being discussed with you and your healthcare provider, your obstetrician or your midwife. But then if it doesn't work, and maybe the cord has to get cut after 30 seconds instead of it being cut after 2 minutes, well, don't have a big stress factor about it. And it is what it is, and it's probably just as it's meant to be. Okay, and then who cuts the cord? Very, very often I have found in my experience that when you talk about that with the partner before the actual event, there's a creepy factor that gets in there that the partner's like, yeah, no, I don't think I want to do that. Eek, probably not. And what I always say is, look, that's okay. Look, you know, we'll just give you the option at the time. And that's what I'd recommend is your plan. If your partner is feeling uncomfortable about it, because, like, I mean, they've never seen it before. They don't know how they're going to feel about looking at this cord and might be pulsing and there's a bit of blood and there's ooze and goo and other things going on around it. But what I do find is that when you show them at the time, they realize, the partners, these dudes, particularly the dudes, they seem to get a little bit more creeped out about it, whereas women partners don't seem to mind. But they can realize it's not that big a deal and it's actually a very simple thing to do. And sometimes the women themselves have done it. And I have to say, I think that is really cool. Really cool. You know, that cord is—it's still the rest of the placenta is still inside your body, and it's you disconnecting from the baby growing inside you. So I think that is very cool as well. What I don't think is cool is when the doctor or the midwife just takes it over and does it. It should be part of a honored ceremony that takes a split second to do. And one thing I always would point out is that whoever's cutting the cord needs to cut quite strongly. Like, it's quite tough. Imagine gristle, you know, that's what you're kind of cutting through with often what seem to be quite a blunt pair of scissors, to be honest. Don't know how often the cord cutting scissors get sharpened in a hospital. Okay, next on my little list for you, placenta. Like, what are you going to do with this placenta once it comes out? I know that there are countries around the world where it is very commonly seen as something creepy that you wouldn't want to touch. But again, I sort of look back at where I was trained, which is in New Zealand, and certainly the majority of women there keep the placenta. So what is it that they do with it? Two things, and that is they will either bury it as a little bit of a ceremony, giving the placenta back to the earth, or they will have it encapsulated. So explain those two processes a little bit more, and again, with there is podcasts on this, which go into even more detail. But basically, the commonest thing to do if you're going to bury it is just to shove it in the freezer until you get a moment in time where you might buy a sapling, a little young tree, and bury it, or take it to a forest or do something else, or put it in the garden and grow the most vibrant tomatoes ever. Or you can send it off to an encapsulation service that dries it, turns it into powder, puts it in the powder, puts it into capsules, and then the woman consumes those capsules in the first month. We are the only mammal that does not consume our placenta. I think that the goodies inside the placenta would do a lot to help the woman's body, particularly her iron levels. So Mother Nature does not make anything rubbish. And as midwives, we do have a great respect and admiration for the placenta, its role. It's a very clever role, what it does, and we don't really like to see it just regarded as hospital trash. Okay, but we understand that not everybody feels that way. Vitamin K. So vitamin K is usually given either orally or an injection pretty soon after a baby is born to prevent vitamin K deficiency disease where there's hemorrhaging going on, especially hemorrhaging to the brain causing permanent brain damage. So make sure you're very aware of what that's for and that you're very aware of the risk factors if you choose to decline it. And again, there's a good podcast on that that goes into more detail. If you yourself have hepatitis B or tuberculosis and maybe some other diseases, there may be some vaccines that are being recommended to be given to your baby. So you need to know about that. And also your baby will be later on starting some vaccines, which will all sort of come into the conversation, which you need to be knowing about. There's also a hearing screen that is done when a baby's not too old, a few days old, and that is it's absolutely painless. They usually like to do that. Not everywhere does it, but if it's offered, it's painless, and they like to do it when the baby's asleep, and it's basically sending some sound waves down the ear canal to see if they bounce back. So that sort of tells the healthcare professional that there is an eardrum present. So a good thing to do. It's not a diagnostic test. It's not saying your baby can or can't hear or is or isn't deaf. It's just doing a screen to make sure that it looks like there is an eardrum there. And if there's any sort of slightly abnormal readings, then they'll go on and say, let's do some more testing. And then the other last thing I want to talk about very quickly is that the Guthrie's heel prick metabolic screen that's done when the babies are a few days old. And this is basically to pick up, hopefully, a whole gamut of different diseases that are screened for. But they're all metabolic disorders, which generally, if you wait until some symptoms are seen, then probably some damage has been done to that baby. So they tend to be things that it's very good to know as soon as possible that baby could have that metabolic disorder, because that changes, can change this, how that baby is managed for their care, so that, you know, you can have the best outcomes for them as a child and as an adult. And so what they do is they prick the heel of the baby and collect some blood on a card. Now, that card generally goes to the testing center and sort of generally stays there. But depending on the process of where you live, quite often you can ask to have that card returned to you if you don't like the idea of their blood being permanently stored in a testing center. Most of the times in the countries, they do permanently store them. Really more for the point that if a baby was later discovered as having one of those metabolic disorders, but it was not picked up with their heel prick test, it's an opportunity for them to go back and just make sure that they can refine their services and retest that card potentially. And so that's like making sure that they're doing their best practice. I have heard of the cards occasionally being used to identify a deceased child. So what I'd say is that if you do request the card to come back, well, hold on to it. Just keep it in your baby memorabilia box, you know, so it is there. Anyway, that's everything. It's a big, long list for you today. But those are the main things that I think are really great to be focusing on at this stage in your pregnancy and starting to tick off on your to-do list. And, so just a reminder, we've got lots more webinars here, and I do, of course, do private consulting. If you feel like you just need a bit more one-on-one, so drop me an email or go onto the website and you can see those packages as well. So I wish you all the best for the rest of your day, and we'll catch up next time. See you, everybody. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.